Good evening. Welcome to the Hologram Radio Show. Today is Father's Day. My name is Cheryl Catherine Smith.
And my name is Ash Riot.
That is correct.
I'm saying my name so slow. Like,
so
I forget it.
You forgot your name.
Not yet.
We are here on Sunday, June the what?
17th.
I'm looking at your computer and I'm not even seeing it. Yes, it's been a lovely rainy Father's Day, kind of raining and not raining kind of day.
It's pretty.
We didn't even realize when we named our show, The Divine Masculine, that today was Father's Day.
Huh.
So what about the perfection of timing there?
Well, it is. But have you noticed, if you are listeners to our show, oh, faithful listeners, you'd know that our shows somehow always fall on a holiday. Well, not, I mean, every week, but when there's a holiday, we're probably having a show.
That's true. We're on Sundays.
So gather your family.
Because we're, yeah, gather your family, and chances are you'll be in having some kind of festivity while our show's on. Yeah, we didn't even pick that. It just happens to fall kind of every biweekly, just work that way. And here we are again, Father's Day, Sunday, not planned, but again, Spirit has a plan. We trust that Spirit has a plan. And even for Travis, who's now joining us, he's quite excited to be up here with us. He didn't want to get left out.
So
right,
he's
buddy?
Sitting on the bed.
I wish you could bark at everybody and say, hello, hello, and happy Father's Day. Roof, roof. That's what he sounds like. Or no, he has a bit of
like
a lisp.
I love you.
I love you, everybody. Hey, we should have a contest, you know. Send in what you think Travis the Chug.
He sneezes a lot.
Sounds
all
like.
You have to do is fake lick him and he sneezes. It's really weird.
Well, he is a rescue. Who knows what happened to him the other 2.5 years of his life before he came into ours.
Maybe someone just poked him or something and he sneezes.
I don't know. Maybe he's allergic to rain. He comes from California and we got a lot of rain here in Vancouver.
I think even some Vancouverites are allergic to rain.
Well, we have the highest incidence of SAD, I think. One
really?
Of the highest in the world. Seasonally affected disorder, because it's quite cloudy and rainy here. But you know what? I revel in the rain. I love the rain.
I love the rain.
I do not find it sad at all. I find it soothing and very cozy. The rain makes me feel cozy. And I'm never one for wearing an umbrella out. I just go out in the rain and let the rain make my hair even curlier.
I've never carried an umbrella. Wow. That's something I didn't know we had in common.
Well, I don't carry umbrellas. I just, you know, if it's really raining hard, I'll wear a hat. That's my umbrella.
Me too. Weird.
Look at that. We're discovering things about each other on the radio show live
that we
here.
We didn't even know before. This is weird.
It's genuinely weird, but it's wonderful, because most weird is wonderful. And so we are talking, as I said, about the divine masculine, because in January we had a show, we called it The Divine Feminine, and that was a long time ago, so we are kind of a little late in finding the balance, and we're not trying to be woman-centric or feminine-centric, because there is balance in all things, and in balance there is always, I believe.
Balance.
No. Contentment.
I agree.
Ash just put on some sunglasses.
In the basement.
The future's so bright, she's got to wear shades.
Ow.
I'm glad you had to put those on because your future's so bright.
Thanks. I'm glad that you noticed my future is so bright that you had to do this.
So, Ash, let's talk about your dad, because we you know, we've got Divine Masculine as our topic, but we thought we'd talk about Father's Day a bit today and the importance of men. Right? The importance of men in our lives, the importance of fathers. Today we're celebrating fathers, but we've got grandfathers. We have brothers. We have husbands. We have male friends, male family members. So did you want to talk a little bit maybe about your dad or Father's Day, or even just about how having male energy in your life, how it's contributed to where you are today?
Well, I really believe, like, first off, that, like, especially, like, having the dad that I do, like, I've seen what hard work is, for sure. I mean, it's been a great example. And, I mean, I'm sure whoever is out there that has had a close relationship with their dad or a dad who's always been working, that's been my experience, because my dad was in a band from, like, since I was born. And then he's been a DJ for a long time, so he's basically had, like, musician hours.
He also owned a nightclub for a while.
Yeah, they owned a nightclub.
So then those are like crazy hours, right?
Yeah, so it's been a really busy time, but I mean, I've always felt like he's made a lot of time for me, even though
he's been busy providing for your family.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, it's a pretty vague topic when there's so much to say. But I think that the whole importance of male energy in my life, like, I've always gotten along better with males than females all my life.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always had more friends that are guys than girls.
So why is that, do you think?
I'm not too sure. I think it's just we've always just kind of been able to relate on different levels. I mean, I was never the kind of girl that was like, well, of course I played with Barbies. But I wasn't the kind of, I was definitely a tomboy growing up. For, like, after, like, my mom painted my room pink until I was probably about, oh, I don't even remember. Maybe about 11, it was painted pink. And I mean, the shag carpet was pink.
Really?
The bedspread, the ceiling,
anti-you.
The curtains, the walls, the dressers. Every blanket on the bed was pink. And I'm talking the sheets, then the blanket, then the other blanket, and then the blanket at the end of the bed.
How old were you again? 11?
Till I was, no, maybe a little, yeah, till probably about 11. Or No. It was before I moved in. So I was 8. Young till I was 8, and I just went, why did I do that? I can't even take pink anymore. And so since then, I mean, I was always the kid into sports. I was like quarterback at school, and I don't know, I was just really into sports, and I really found that like the girls were always competing with each other, and my safe place was with the guys because they weren't competing with me. They just really treated me like an equal.
Cool.
It was really cool just because they don't, I think that what it is they don't often really see a girl that likes the same things as they do in the same way, you know, or they haven't, I don't know, just had that common ground. So it was nice for me because I got to feel that, you know, like all the other girls were just like kind of scared about the guys or they, you know, were vying for their attention, but I didn't want their attention really. Like I had a couple crushes, including this guy at camping named BJ. Who cut his finger.
Oh, I always laugh at that.
I totally laugh at the name BJ.
Sorry.
But anyway, the funniest thing about that, well, it's not at all. He cut his finger off.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I finally got to talk to him.
That's not funny at all.
No, but I finally got to talk to him.
Oh, my goodness.
And I asked him out, and this other girl named Norma, she stole him away from me. Even though he was like 15 and I was 6, it didn't matter. Okay?
In your 6-year-old mind, he would one day fall desperately in love with you.
Yes.
And come up riding on his white horse.
I'm sure he is now.
And
he
take
just
you to his castle.
To I know.
Isn't it amazing when we're little girls and we have crushes and you know what's in our mind around? It's funny. I'm just kind of going back.
I don't even know what was
now.
Special about him. I liked him. And so anyway,
You felt sorry for him because he cut his finger off.
No, I liked him before then, but I just was too shy to talk to him.
Did they sew his finger back on?
Yeah.
Good. Here I am looking at me. This is totally relaxed and not scripted, can't you tell?
But anyway, yeah, I've always just really taken like a lot of shelter in just hanging out with my male friends because there was really no expectation. It was just let's just kind of coexist together and, you know, pleasurably and not sexually, I mean. Like, by pleasurably,
yeah, but
I mean, like...
it's also, I guess there's not any direct competition, because when, for example, a lot of times when you're hanging out with females, you're a female, there's this kind of, I don't know if it's even human nature, it's a natural kind of innate thing where there's this competition underlying all the well, sweetness and light.
Well, even what Tori Amos said, I remember reading this in a book that she said, and she said that what women do to each other is worse than Chinese nail torture.
Yeah, well, I agree with her.
Me
and,
too.
You know, that's something that we can maybe, we'll see how we do for time. We can even touch on it, because we talked about the divine feminine, as I said, in January. And those of you listening, if you're interested in listening to that show, just look up January 2012 and you'll see it. You can download it in the archives. In the meantime, feel free to call in and just chat with us about the divine masculine, what it means to you, and maybe even just a little bit about men in general and men in your lives, or whether you're a man yourself. What does the divine masculine mean to you? Our call-in number, toll-free in Canada and the United States, is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008, USA and Canada. I just wanted to first of all say, we're talking about divine masculine. Well, what does that mean? All right, so we're bringing divinity into the masculine. So, again, the same with the divine feminine. The divinity is the highest self. It's going to that higher part of each of us, and which is within each of us. Now, I specifically, nor are we specifically speaking about men only. And we've said this even in our show before, the divine feminine, that it's about embracing that part within each of us, because we are composed, each and every one of us, of both the divine masculine and the divine feminine, you know, and our gender dictates what we are leaning towards, but we also have the other within us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was getting ready for the show and reading, I just love the internet, because it just, you know, you just Google whatever and, you can just get anything popping up, and it's amazing what you find. I mean, some of it is complete insanity, and some of it is ha-ha moments, right? They offer a lot of wisdom, and they offer a lot of insight. And I was reading one particular woman who was blogging. I don't even know her name. This is off the top of my head, but talking about how we talk about our world consciousness and the shift in consciousness, and everybody's talking about 2012. We've mentioned it before in our shows, and you know, some people are of the mindset that everything's going to come to an end, and some people are of a mindset that everything's going to transform and shift. So we're actually going to change our world, our collective consciousness. It's going to be a huge shift. And this particular woman was writing about how each of us need to access the divine masculine, divine feminine, not in order for this shift to occur, but that it actually is just naturally going to occur as a result of the shift. And so what I read with that, because I concur, and this is why I'm sharing it, because this is my mindset as well, is that it's not going to be a lot of work for us to access the divine, because that's our inherent nature. It's not that we have to work, and this is why I'm not really a fan, obviously not really, I'll just say I'm not, I don't even have to temper it, a fan of religion, because religion is about work. Even when they say it's faith, not works, that's not true, because it's about work. It's about working at not sinning, working at making sure that you don't stray, and all the different things.
Or
follow this rule, or make sure that you honor God on a certain day, because that's the only day that, you know, God has set aside. And if you don't, you know, that's another big X against your name. I find that completely abhorrent. I've lived through it. I could tell you my story. Ash could tell you hers. We have in little bits and pieces throughout the you know, all the shows that we've had, we've shared our own religious, what do you call it? Lifestyles, religious experiences. And so here we are now going, doesn't work. I don't think it not only doesn't work for an individual, but it doesn't work for our society. And I think that's part of the collective consciousness. We're going to see that. It's not to say that your religious beliefs or your philosophical beliefs or whatever you have that you hold near and dear is going to wash away, because it's not about disrespecting each person's mindset. It's about being open-minded and having new awareness is brought in, having a new way of seeing things brought in, and having an openness. And the more open we are, the more we will feel that we are indeed one, which we are. Mm-hmm. And even if you look into physics, I've brought this up before, where there is nothing that's solid. We're all just molecules floating around. So we really are part of one web. But we, as part of our reality to be here, we see things as separate because we want to have that separate relationship mm-hmm. to all things. We want to feel that we're individuals having a relationship with all things. Getting back to the divine masculine, I want to talk a little bit about what it is that means I am masculine. What are the masculine traits? If we bring divinity into it, it's about the higher levels. It's about the we levels, again, because divinity is about accessing the highest part of ourselves, but also recognizing how we each are connected.
That's why there is a divine masculine and feminine.
So then why don't you talk, if you want to bring, you know, you can bring it in now, the aspects of the divine masculine. What traits do you feel would bring a greater harmony? This isn't even just about world harmony, because if we each have personal harmony, personal peace, it's just going to naturally become world peace.
Mm-hmm.
It all truly does start within us.
Well, I think that that's what's important. Like you asked me what traits.
Yes.
The perfect trait for me for divine masculinity is realizing that there isn't and there shouldn't be, maybe that there couldn't be, any one thing that has to make a man. That it, like, imperatively that you need in order to be a man. And I've seen that so much where it's, oh, I gotta be this, I gotta be that, I gotta be so tough, I gotta, you know, I gotta impress this person by, you know, showing that I'm not gonna take any crap or whatever, right? Like, that is one stereotype that I think has really bothered me throughout my life.
Yeah.
Is when there's a certain expectation for a man to act a certain way. I mean, women too, and that's a whole other ballgame. But
yeah, but we're talking about men right now, and I think it's hard on men.
It really is, men. It really is hard on men. And so I think that probably the best trait is just realizing that there can be a merriment of physical, like a physical, it doesn't matter about the physical bodies. It matters about, like, the insides, and that sounds totally and completely cliche. But, like, women can have some of the traits that are not expected of them as well as men. So, like, one thing that I found the most beautiful in a lot of male divinity is sensitivity, because that's expected. Oh, you know, you're a sissy if you're, like, no, that's, I think, what we need more of. And I
well,
just,
but that's, okay, so you're confusing me. I'm going to, because I feel that that's the divine feminine, the sensitivity, not to say that men can't be sensitive.
But that's exactly what I'm saying, though. For to think that that would be a divine feminine, it can be a divine masculine,
yeah,
too.
It's not only divine feminine, but I think that the feminine nature of sensitivity and nurturing is part of that too. I think masculine sensitivity has its own place. I think it's almost
completely.
Like it's a whole other issue.
I agree completely. And that's why I'm saying women are not the only ones who are should be expected to have that. Women,
well, definitely not, but it should be masculine. Like,
of course, and
okay,
it is.
Just for clarity,
yeah,
that's
it
all.
Is. So,
okay.
So that's what I'm trying to say is that women and men can have sensitivity and it doesn't have to be, you know, part of their gender.
Well, sure. Divine masculine. Sensitivity becomes a part of being masculine. It's not considered a womanly thing. It's not considered sissy. I don't even like that word, but we'll just use it. It's not considered weak, right? Because what I feel very strongly with our society being so patriarchal mm-hmm. and so focused on the, like, everything yin the yang, the balance, the light, the dark, the yin mm-hmm. the yang, the masculine, the feminine, mm-hmm. the great things about the masculine energy and the not so great when it kind of goes awry. Mm-hmm. It's like everything has assets. Like, every asset can easily become a defect when it's overly exercised or put too much emphasis
Agreed.
On. So let's talk about that in relationship to being a masculine, like having masculine energy. So one of the things that I see, we'll talk about the sensitivity in a second, but I want to talk about the power. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the power of men, the men who are the leaders, the men who are the warlords, the warriors, the ones who are garnering great trust because they have a way of being able to be seen mm-hmm. as someone who will look after us. Because they're powerful, they have power, they have strength. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a great thing. I see that as a beautiful thing in the masculine energy, and I think it's something that a lot of women can integrate a little bit more in their own psyches, because it's about having a sense of, it's not power over others, it's even having a sense of empowerment. I like the word empowerment better, mm-hmm. because empowerment can transcribe also to being a trusted leader, because when you are empowered, others can see it and feel it, and they're going, I want a bit of that. Can mm-hmm. you know, and instead of I want you to do it for me, it's I want a bit of that. Can you teach me how I can mm-hmm. feel that way about myself? But getting back to this idea of the power of men and how it can actually go far too much to the emphasis being on the power. And then I think a lot of men are taught in our society, our cultures, and I'll say world cultures, and some of them are even more stringent on this mm-hmm. than others. But the general consensus I feel is that, well, one of the things I hear a lot of men saying is that they were taught not to cry. Don't cry. You know, be a man. Don't cry. And I'm not saying this for all. So for those of you who out there who are males who have been encouraged to cry, I say thank you to your parents, because that's a beautiful thing. And I encourage my own son to feel his feelings. But just my own male relationships and my marriages, just talking about what does it mean to be a man? Well, I'm not supposed to cry. I'm supposed to buck up. I'm supposed to, you know, take it like a man. I'm supposed to basically kind of squash my feelings, and then it's important that I have status and power, that I am seen as someone who is in charge or who can command some kind of respect based on my position, whether it's a position in a career or whether it's a position even in a family, within mm-hmm. a family, there, you know. So getting back, just again, I don't want to talk too roundabout here. I want to stay strict to my point. My point is this. There is nothing wrong with empowerment or having power. It's how we use it. And so the divine masculine to me is not so much about power for the sake of power, because you know that saying where, you know, power, too much power can corrupt. It's about taking that and sharing it and empowering others. And this to me is the divinity of power for men, for masculinity, for the masculine traits that each of us have. Is recognizing that power is not something that you should say no to, just like money. Mm-hmm. I mean, money's not a bad thing.
Well, there's a difference between it's power.
What you
and,
do with it?
There's a difference between power and greed, and I think that there's more saying yes to greed than there is to power sometimes, and that's what screws us up. So all I know is that I've seen that especially, and I'm going to go back to the religion for a minute before I tie it back into masculinity. But I've seen a lot of that in Christianity and religion. But, I mean, especially growing up and going to a Christian school, which was a great, great, great experience for me, or, you know, just seeing it through some of their friends and some of the people at the school. But it was always, you were always more in if you were going to the churches that had a lot of money, or if you were, you know, going to this youth group or going to that youth group. And, you know, I was actually like kicked out of a chapel band. I was playing bass in a chapel band, and I was kicked out because I wasn't part of that. And I was better than some of the other players, but it didn't matter. I wasn't. And another kid got kicked out too, because he wasn't part of the group.
But you're talking about cliquiness. This has nothing to do with masculine.
Yes, it does. I'm getting there. I'm getting there about
cliquiness.
Power. No. I'm getting there about power and greed.
Okay.
So anyway.
Back on track.
I'm right on there.
There's my masculine energy coming
there
out.
There it is. So anyway, what I'm saying is that especially, you know, going to that Christian school and going to that, the greed is something that is different than power, because you're seeing the, how the money takes over. You're seeing how all of that can really corrupt, you know, a place of power, which is what you were talking about. So I think that that in completion is really, really, really where a lot of the masculinity really gets overshadowed by power. It's not okay. And, but like, I'm relating the power to the greed. So when I'm saying power, I'm meaning greed. Like, that is not okay to me. I mean, you even think of like some of the great revolutionaries of our time. They were really great, great male role models. And I'm talking about musicians here. Like, look at Jimi Hendrix. He was all about fighting a certain frame of mind of masculinity. He really did that well.
A lot of the male artists that you and I share in terms of who we respect and who we listen to and who we read, they all have the same thread within between themselves. And each and every one of them, writers, poets, musicians, all the males, I know for me, they all respected women. It wasn't about that total like rock star mentality, you know, how many women can I bed? And, you know, they each of them highly respected not only women. Like, I'm going to use John Lennon as an example. I love John Lennon. I absolutely love him. He was a man who was passionate, who loved his woman, his wife, passionately. And they together wanted world peace passionately. He was honest to the core. He said things that people didn't like. He pissed the Christians off when he said we're more popular than Jesus, but he was right. And a lot of times truth pisses people off. And I think that when we get to a place of embracing each other's divinity, we can even move out of the masculine and feminine here. We can just say, you are a divine piece of God as I am, or goddess, or spirit, or universe, or whatever you choose to call source energy, creator. You are equally a piece as I am. And John is a great example right now for me, because he was one who wasn't afraid to be sensitive, to say he doesn't care if people didn't like his wife. He loved his wife, to honor her, to honor her, the essence of her, to say that, you know, to give her kudos as, you know, that she balanced him out where he was super masculine. She helped him to see that softer side of him, you know, the divine masculine. I also think of Kurt Cobain too. He's a good, he's somebody who, even him wearing dresses and having people dancing on stage, you know, the girls wearing the shirt
saying, that says boy.
And then the man wearing the shirt saying girl. And that, you know, questioning about what about our gender roles? Why do we get so caught up on, you know, what it means to be a man or what it means to be a woman? Why can't we just embrace that each of us have a little bit of both within us, and it doesn't even have to do with our sexuality. Take the sexuality out of it.
It doesn't even have to do with our body.
No, because it just, that messes people up. It's all about our mind, our emotion, our spirit, the general, you know, the essence of who we are underneath this frame, underneath this skin. And I just think, to me, divine masculine is essential. I'm not going to go and say, well, we have to have the divine feminine more than the divine masculine. I believe we need them both equally. They're both essential. But what I see in the world today is that the divine, forget about the divine, that the masculine, the traits that we're talking about, the power, the greed, the strength, the, you know, don't show emotion, always look in control, power, like all the more masculine traits, are being, have been, and are being over-emphasized, over-celebrated, over-tolerated. And that we are having to swing back to feminine, you know, encouraging the feminine nature within everyone on this planet to get back to the middle ground. Now, I read today on one of these blogs that what this woman, again, I'm sorry, I apologize, I don't remember your name, but this woman was writing about the essential requirement for the shift of consciousness to get to where we have world love, world peace, world recognition, and understanding of one another is that we all have to merge our divine masculine and our divine feminine natures.
That's true.
It's like a self-integration. And it happens within, as I said before, within each and every one of us. It's not something, what I see in the, even the New Age kind of movement is a lot of, I'm going to take this course. I'm going to take that seminar. I'm going to read this book. I'm going to go do this thing. Oh, now I got to do this thing. Oh, now I got to do that thing. It's almost like grasping, grasping, grasping. And the Buddhists are great because they talk about the graspers. And I think it's really important that each of us kind of maybe stay still a little bit, maybe be a little more reflective, maybe be a little more meditative, maybe just look within and ask ourselves some key questions. First of all, what do you think a key question is? Because I'll tell you what I think the first one is.
Go for it.
Am I where I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Am I where I want to be?
That's a very key question.
At this point in my life, in this moment, am I where I want to be or wish to be or thought I'd be? And then that will kind of success in a succession, I can't even speak, lead to other questions.
Mm-hmm.
And if not,
that's a good place to start.
If not, if I'm not where I want to be, what is it that I need to do to get there? It's not so much about a seminar or a course. In some cases it is, but don't get too focused on doing too much. I'm guilty of that. I actually had somebody tell me, a really wise person, saying, Cheryl, why don't you just stop? Because I just want it. It's like, feed me, feed me, feed me. I want truth. I want the truth. I want light. I want love. I want spirit. I want the highest in my life. I want my life to be divinely guided and led. And I want to be in connect with the divinity that I am, the goddess that I am. I want to be able to share it with the world. I want to be able to be, you know, open to it from others. And
yeah.
It's all of that. All of it came together. And I did a lot of reading and a lot of, you know, going to different situations where people were teaching and speaking. And I'm grateful. I mean, I'm grateful for that. But there had to come a time where I had to stop the reading,
mm-hmm.
stop the attendance, and just sit and be with it.
Well, that's important. Otherwise, it's just information overload. It's hard to differentiate between what you even find useful to yourself.
Well, then I was in the same mind trap as I was when I was a practicing Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that I wasn't good enough, I wasn't doing enough, that I wasn't in touch enough. What do I have to do to be in touch? Is this the right thing? Is that the right thing? It was way too confusing for me. So I love Eckhart Tolle's story, and he's the author of The Power of Now and The New Earth, and he's got quite a following now. His story is that he did nothing before all this happened to him.
Oh, yeah, I remember
he sat on a bench.
And then all of a sudden,
he was homeless.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Okay,
the homeless guy.
So here you are. You know, a lot of people would look at someone who is homeless, you know, and basically turn their nose at them and say, who are you? You're not contributing to society. What kind of man are you? Especially a man, right? What kind of a man are you? And he just doesn't even apologize for it because he doesn't have to. He shouldn't have to. He just says it as a matter of fact that was necessary for me to get to the place where I understood where I needed to be. The story of Neil Donald Walsh, very similar those of you who
too.
Know the Conversations with God author and all of his books. He was homeless for a while. He was, you know, at a very low point in his life and, asked some key questions and had this miraculous thing occur as a result of asking the questions. So I think it's really important for each of us to, again, getting to the divinity. Don't think it's hard. It's not hard. I know I'm an overthinker. I make everything harder than it is. Ash can attest to that. She knows me. And I'm just sharing my own path and saying, you know, it's not as hard as any of us think it is. In fact, I think sometimes it's so simple we think it could be that way.
That's true.
Isn't that true? It's too easy. That can't be it.
Well, exactly. And that's how it is sometimes. I mean, really, the first step to change is just actually, like, understanding that it's like whatever thought you're thinking of. Like, you know, say you're going, okay, well, you know, I really have to, I'll just use this, go back to school. I mean, just that thought is the first step. Or asking, you know, where am I? Am I happy with where I am right now? Or that's the first step, is just like having the courage to think that. Because so many people just don't have the courage to want, you know, the change. Change is too hard. Change is more difficult than, you know, just letting things stay the same, but it's not.
I think it's important for this because we're talking about the divine masculine as women. You know, and I'm very much in touch. I feel very much in touch with my masculine side. I've relied on it actually quite a bit in my life, because I do have a strength and a power that is, I attribute to that divine masculine part of my life. And I'm grateful for it. And then I have the divine feminine side, where I have the nurturing and the, maybe the compassion. And both men and women, of course, have compassion, but I'm talking about very specific compassion that's feminine. To me, personally, it's about an extra compassion for all living creatures and for children and for animals. And that, to me, is very feminine. It's sort of it's that feminine part of me that has presented itself in that. And again, we don't have to get in an argument about what do you think is specifically masculine or what do you think is specifically feminine, because it is about integrating the two. And I think that eventually world consciousness and the way we shift, that we're not even really going to see too much of a difference. I think it's just going to kind of integrate into just the divine.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And I'm not just saying that we're all going to morph and become hermaphrodites or anything. I'm saying in terms of energetically, in terms of consciously, in terms of our souls and our energy, that there's, it's just going to be. There won't be any specific leaning towards one way or another in terms of, well, I have to be a man, so I need to act this way, or I have to be a lady, I need to act this way, right? There's this great British comedy that I exposed Ash to. Do you remember?
Which one?
Little Britain.
Yeah.
And do you remember, David, I can't remember his last name, but he's David Wallums. He has a character, which is Emily, the lady.
Oh, it's totally awesome.
For those of you who don't know, look up Little Britain, and you'll know what I mean by this. But it's this very obvious, very tall, very masculine man putting on a curly wig and a dress.
It's really funny.
And going around telling everybody,
wanting to use the bathroom.
Yeah, well, I'm a lady. Yeah. I think that's a really good, funny, visual, kind of impacting way of seeing this. It's not about kind of disguising or masking ourselves. It's just about being who we are, integrating all of these things and being content with it.
Agreed. Totally agreed. I was just looking at the time, and I want to tell everybody that it is in your best interest to give us a call. Oh, that sounds like a threat.
What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Going to pull out that masculine side of you and punch him?
Yeah, the computer. Call in, please. 886. No, sorry. 888. So here it is, everybody. 1-888-627-6008. It's free and fabulous.
It's free and fabulous. No, we're not free, but we're fabulous.
Yeah, that's good.
Are you free and fabulous?
I'm
free and fabulous most of the time.
So why don't you talk a little bit about Father's Day and your dad?
Well, I have a whole different experience because my father killed himself when I was 8. And it sounds really abrupt, but that's just the way it is. It's the truth. And so he was not part of my life when I was younger, because he was estranged from my mother from the age of 2. And my mother never did remarry. So I didn't really have any real, true male father role growing up. There were some family members that, you know, were stepped in, you know, and that was, and I'm very grateful. But overall, very much without it. And so how does it impact me? It impacts me that I don't even remember when Father's Day is. It impacts me that initially when I was younger, it was hard.
I bet.
It was so hard. And then when I had my son, it was hard because he didn't have a grandfather and I didn't have a father to share. And I, you know, I actually did secretly wish that my mom would have married again. I wanted to have another dad and or someone to fill that role, because it is a very specific role. And you don't, I realize now, I mean, you don't have to actually be a father to fill that role.
No, you don't.
But you definitely have to take on some responsibility to fill that role. It's not, you know, it's being a father. You know, Kurt has a line, "You're my dad or father." What's that one?
Oh, "I tried hard to have a father, but instead I had a dad."
Yeah, it's interesting because he, you know, he relates father to being the more intimate of the two. And I kind of think dad or daddy personally is more intimate for me
than
father, because, but that's, that was his way of, that's how he sees it.
Yeah.
But that's basically kind of, you know, where I was at. Like, I wish, I really always secretly wish that I had someone to call that, someone that who, you know, I mean, a lot of my family members and my friends, they had fathers, and the fathers were giving them advice that I never got. You know, I never got financial advice. I never got even dating advice from my dad. You know, I didn't have a father to give that to me. I didn't have a father to walk me down the aisle. I didn't have a father to, you know, help me out with my first university payment. I didn't have a father to help me move. And these are the things I've seen other people's fathers do. And I, you know, I did kind of sit on my pity pot for a while there going, boo hoo, woe is me. I hate my dad for doing that. But I soon came out of that and realized now that no matter where we each are, some of us have lost our fathers, some of us have lost our mothers, some of us have lost siblings. You know, everybody suffers. Everybody on this planet has had some kind of tragedy or loss through death or even through illness. So it helps me to understand that I can't really just sort of say, woe is me. There's so many other people that have had the same or similar experiences. It gives me compassion and empathy for others. It also helps me to recognize that where I didn't have love, I had it in other places. It forced me to stop telling life how it should be. It forced me to stop telling people what roles they should play in my life. It opened my eyes to allowing even people like your dad. Mm-hmm. He's become like a dad.
Of course he
to
has,
me.
Definitely.
And so here, you know, I've opened up and there's a man that I would never have imagined, you know, suddenly says, "Hey, I'll take care of you in a way." And he kind of has that role in a way for me, which is so beautiful. And so I'm grateful because, you know, instead of focusing for me on what has been taken away, which I did for a long time, I turned it around to be focusing on what is. And it opening our eyes and being less narrow-minded to what we think things should be, and I can't stand that word should, but we use it a lot. I've had it used a lot around me. Just looking at what is and just marveling, wow, you know, this person isn't my father, but look at all the fatherly kind of things they're doing for me. Isn't that something? And just being really grateful and staying in the gratitude. So I think the most important thing for all of us is to always stay in the gratitude, to focus on the gratitude.
I agree.
And this integration of the divine masculine, the integration of the divine feminine, and bringing balance is something that we each do. Again, we do ourselves. But notice, as you step into being open-minded, being willing, being very, very honest and forthright with your situation, where you are in your life, in your mind, in your thoughts, and being willing to step into a more divine, authentic life, you'll notice that just the willingness alone mm-hmm. will bring every day something new in your path, some kind of a sign. Pay attention to the signs and the symbols that are around you. Pay attention to the numbers. We've talked about numbers. We've talked about animal totems. We've talked about, I think I might have even talked about symbols at some point, saying how the spiral is a big symbol for me personally, as is the star. Numbers are big for me. So I kind of have my own little, I don't know, I won't call it a journal. I'll call it a catalog. It's almost as if throughout my life, between me and the divine, we've kind of set up a catalog. And it's a catalog of Cheryl. And it's my catalog that says these things have particular and certain meanings to me. And they act as guideposts. And so whatever your catalog is, whatever, you know, you might even, it's something, it's a lifelong creation. So it's something that we're constantly working on. But pay attention to the things that are repeating and that you're seeing. And that just in and of itself gives you a sense that you are supported, that you aren't alone, that there really is no such thing as a coincidence, that all things come together for good to those who love spirit, connection, creator, the divinity that they are. And yeah, it's a rough ride. There's times when things don't make sense. There's times when we're in so much agony, so much despair, that we just want to die, be dead, maybe even self-harm. Sometimes some of us indulge in a little bit of that. But I think the important thing is just hang on and pay attention to things that are outside ourselves. Because if we go, I'm saying to go within, but if we go within we're kind of stuck in our mind like a hamster wheel, that's not a good thing either. So in those instances, it's important to go outside ourselves. And that's why we talked about volunteering.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Again, that's ball. It's that like all our shows are kind of coming together, because to volunteer and give of ourselves is also part of connecting to the divine. Because yeah. There you will also find your catalog symbols. There will be things that will happen to you when you are connecting with other people. I like the Native philosophy, you know, when the teacher, you know, the teacher will come when you are ready. We are teachers, we are students, all of us. Yeah. We're, you know, we're masters, we're students, we're masters. I hope this is making sense. This is all kind of spirit-led, that what I'm speaking to you about now. I'm speaking from experience, and I'm speaking from a place of knowing, from a place of deep pain that has resurrected, quite literally, to become love, enlightenment. And enlightenment is not like the top of the ladder. Enlightenment is something where you have an awakening and it just opens up everything and things become brighter, clearer. It doesn't mean that we are apart from anything. In fact, I see enlightenment as realizing, recognizing how much we are apart, not a part. If you know what I mean. Instead of being apart, meaning separate, we become apart, meaning collective, of all things. And everything is miraculous. I love Albert Einstein speaking about, you know, you have two choices, basically, where you live, where everything is a miracle or where nothing is at all. And I think it's stepping into recognizing that everything is a miracle. I get caught up in the how come I get to be a part of these miracles. And we have to let go of that and go, it's not about how come, it's not about worthiness. We just are each worthy, each of us. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know, that's all I have to say. I mean, divine masculine, thank you. Divine feminine, thank you. You know, if anything brings us to divinity, it brings us to peace. And if we have peace, and there would be no war, no hatred, no rape, no abuse, no child abuse, no sexual abuse, no hatred, no name calling and lacerations of people's souls. based on race or gender, sexual orientation. I mean, it would be wonderful to find a place on this planet, not have to leave it to find mm-hmm. that place, where we don't have to be afraid to let our children go outside of our eyesight. You know, we don't have to think that someone might take them away. We don't have to think that someone might come in and shoot me because they want my purse. Or we don't, you know, to me that just is so, it has no, there's no rhyme or reason around it. If we come from a place of knowing there's abundance for everyone, then why would someone want to steal? Or why would someone want to have power over someone by raping them or sexually assaulting them or emotionally and physically assaulting them?
Yep.
That was sobering.
I agree.
You know, we are Hologram. We're a band, but we're also kind of a philosophy because we do work with muses. We do have, you know, we are very grateful to have this most amazing group of friends and, you know, people that we know that love the band, that support us here. We're really, really, really grateful. And we have a philosophy. It's in music to me is the best communicator. And we do love music. This is not something where we're going, okay, we're going to shove our philosophy down people's throats. How can we do it? Oh, let's become musicians. That's not where we're at. We're musicians who have a philosophy. And it's nothing about, it's just about unity. It's the same philosophy that Jimi Hendrix had, the same philosophy that even the Doors had and have still. I'm sure the guys that are continuing are still doing the same thing for the same reasons. And there's a lot of bands that have this philosophy. It's just about, hey, man, you know, wake up, see things for what they really are, embrace yourself, love music, dig yourself, dig the scene around you. Whatever. I'm looking actually at Jimi Hendrix poster right now, talking about digging it. I just feel Jimmy right here. But we love our music. We love creating music. We love being musicians, but we love being people. We personally, I find it challenging sometimes to be here, but I'm also grateful that I know I'm helped and guided as we all are. And that, there's a saying, you know, God's not going to let the other shoe drop. So I just got to keep hanging on and plugging on just like the rest of you, all of us. And then there's emotional moments where I'm so high that you know, I feel like I'm floating. So
not literally high.
No, but so high emotionally. Mm-hmm. I don't get high anymore. I stopped that many years ago. But no, I'm talking spiritually and emotionally high. I've had meditations where they're mind-blowing, just mind-blowing. I've had these mind-blowing spiritual experiences that, you know, I could fill more than an hour with. But everything comes together to be in this moment. This is our eternity, as Joseph Campbell said. And so I'm talking to you right now on June 18th. Some of you might hear this 5 years from now, and it hits home. I love that about music. I love that about film. Mm-hmm. I get so much from music that was written and performed and created 40, 50 years ago. And the artist has no idea, but I'm being impacted. And that's how I feel whenever we create music, whenever I'm an artist as well, a visual artist. So if I ever create a painting, you know, I think, you know, if this has, you know, staying power in some way, maybe one day when I'm long gone, you know, somebody will be looking at my painting or hearing my song and it becomes their song. It's not mine anymore because it's not. And on that note, I just want to say I celebrate each and every one of you. Thank you for your support of the band. Thank you for listening to our radio show. We didn't get callers again today, but it doesn't mean you're not out there. I know you are. Sometimes when you're here, you think, geez, is anybody listening? But then we hear back from people that have been listening, but they just don't call in. They don't feel compelled to, or maybe they're shy. And that's okay, too. So we'll just ramble, and we'll talk to you about our philosophy. We'll talk to you about what we feel, definitely, what we think. We'll come to you in honesty, authenticity, and ask that you do the same. And, you know, hope. that we can inspire each other to be the best that each of us can be, to embrace the divinity that, that you are, that I am, that each of us are and is. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. And kiss a tree.
We want you to kiss a tree. We'll just, we've got some time. I just figure we should let them listen to one of our songs. We'll ask Don if he'd play.
Spun Sun.
Do you want to play the whole Spun Sun for us, Don? We'll leave everybody because this song, Ash and I wrote this song, Spun Sun, of everyone. It's called Spun Sun. It was the first iTunes release that we did back last year. And we are wanting you to know that what it means, it is literally of everyone. We are the sun. We are spun together. We are all in this together. Blessings to you. Kiss a tree. We're serious. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye. From the spun sun of everyone.